Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting the Senate Transportation Committee to order. The time is 1:33 p.m. We're in Butchovich, room 205, in the nation's most beautiful capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Today is Tuesday, March 10th, 2026. Members present are Senator Rauscher, Senator Keel, Senator Tobin, and myself, Senator Bjorkman. Senator Stedman is excused. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off or silence your cell phones and join me in welcoming our recording secretary, Heather Ramseth, and our LAO moderator, Susan Quigley. Today, we'll hear a presentation on payment parity and prompt payment from the Foraker Group and the Alaska Municipal League. With us today to present this presentation, we have the esteemed Ms. Lori Wolf from the Foraker Group. On Teams, to begin the conversation, she is joined as well by the Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal League, Mr. Nils Andreasen, who is here in the room, as well as Pat Branson, of course, of esteemed Kodiak fame, is on Teams as well. Ms. Wolf, welcome so much to Senate Transportation. We are glad that you are here. You might be asking yourself, if you are watching this around the world, why is the Senate Transportation Committee having a conversation about prompt payment? That is an excellent question. The reason why we're holding this conversation in Senate Transportation is precisely because many of the grants and financial facilities used to provide grant funding to benefit people of Alaska come in the form of some type of transportation modality. So we're having that conversation here so we can kind of raise the awareness of this issue and how it affects Alaskans across the state. That being said, Ms. Wolf, once again, welcome to Senate Transportation. Please put yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Good afternoon, members of the Senate Transportation Committee, Chair Bjorkman, Co-Chair Tobin, and members. I am Lori Wolf, President and CEO of the Foraker Group, a lifelong Alaskan, joining you from my home in Anchorage today. Thank you for inviting me to present on the general topic of prompt payment parity for Alaska's nonprofits, municipalities, and tribal organizations in grants, contracts, and reimbursements from the state of Alaska, and to highlight the importance of Senate Bill 129, sponsored by Senator Kawasaki. As nonprofits ourselves, our purpose is to strengthen nonprofits and tribal organizations across Alaska. When we're not working to actively protect and advance the nonprofit sector through bipartisan or nonpartisan public policy and research, we are working across the state to bring timely education, facilitation, and collaboration tools and resources to Alaska's volunteers and workforce. As you mentioned, Chair Bjorkman, great to wonder why we're having this conversation, and I really appreciate the opportunity. The simple answer is, of course, while we've been listening to the concerns of Alaska's nonprofits and our partners at the Alaska Municipal League have been doing the same with local governments, we cannot ignore that many groups are deeply impacted by delayed payments have been focused on transportation. In fact, the vast majority of public transportation across Alaska is provided by either nonprofits or local governments. It's these delays that make this topic relevant to this committee and our effort to bring these bills to the attention of as many lawmakers as possible. And of course, our hope is that eventually every lawmaker will see that it is simply common sense to pass Senate Bill 129 and House Bill 133 so that we can all ensure that an effective and efficient government is ready to partner with Alaska's nonprofits, municipalities, and tribal organizations who are on the ground delivering services to Alaskans. Today, you're going to hear from Pat Branson, former Kodiak Mayor, Senior Service Executive Director, board member of AgeNet, board member of the Foraker Group, and just amazing human. Pat will share anonymous examples from a variety of nonprofits and municipal transit providers to bring this issue home to this committee. The types of payment delays that she'll share all hinder smooth operations of transportation providers from all corners of the state. And while you listen to her testimony, I want you to know that this is not just a transportation issue. It exists in every department of the state, and it impacts grants, contracts, and reimbursements. I also want you to know that this is not a new issue for payments to be 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, or even a year late, but it has always been unacceptable and an inefficient and ineffective way for the state to do its business. These delays often run from $25,000 to more than $1 million. You can see a snapshot of how big the problem is by looking at the survey results submitted as part of our testimony today, and we are all long overdue to fix this problem. This bill will ensure prompt payment parity for nonprofits, municipalities, and tribal organizations in grants, contracts, and reimbursement, which means nonprofits get to, which means we all get to focus on our missions that in this case is around seniors and infants and transportation and all and everything else that nonprofits and local governments and tribal organizations are doing all the time to serve Alaskans. But we have to fix this partnership because currently it is broken. So let's also be clear that this money is not new money. This money has been approved by legislatures for years to serve Alaskans. One would simply assume that if the money is budgeted, allocated, and approved, then timely spending could occur. In fact, prompt payment is exactly the rule the state must follow with private businesses as directed by state law. Specifically, under current law, AS 36.90.200, if you are a private business or contractor working on a public project, for instance, an airport, a road, or other infrastructure projects, the expectation is that you will be paid on time. If you are not, the state faces penalties and interests, or you can even stop work until payment is received. The reality is that nonprofits, municipalities, and tribal organizations cannot stop doing what we're doing. We are the domestic violence shelters, housing, transportation, healthcare, you name it, and we cannot just stop doing what we need to do to serve Alaskans. Instead, we just want the payment rules to apply to us as well. Over the years, we've tried to solve this problem, hoping that this would not have to get to this stage requiring legislative change. During these efforts, we've often been met with resistance or misdirection. One former commissioner told us that nonprofits should just take out a line of credit to manage delayed payments from the state, as if it were the nonprofit's problem to subsidize the state's inability to pay on time. You likely know, as we do, that not only do lines of credit take collateral that many nonprofits will never have, it is also just not our job to do that on behalf of the state of Alaska. That's exactly what many of them are having to do every day, and it's an impossible choice. As you'll see from the survey and hear from our colleagues today, the impacts are not just missing payments; it's a laundry list of issues that ripple out from that delay, including cash flow issues, operational delays, increased administrative burden, uncertainty in financial planning and challenges, negative impacts on staff and services, and strain on relationships, and I could go on and on and on. All of these impacts are felt, we feel, are cause enough to want us all to work to change the process together. But the reality is, it doesn't just hurt nonprofits and tribes and local governments, it hurts our economy. And that means that it hurts Alaska every day. I'm pleased that you're gonna have an opportunity to hear from Pat directly and from Nils directly. And I hope that you'll also be in contact with your own constituents about the problems that they're facing as Alaskans trying to access the very services that they depend on every day. I look forward to this bill and its House companion being passed into law so that we can all be sure that Alaskans are getting good and effective good governance and getting the needs and services that they depend on every day. I'm happy to stay right for questions. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Ms. Wolf. Senator Rauscher.
Thank you. To the chair. Hi, Ms. Wolf. I appreciate what you're bringing forward. I was just wondering, does this legislation talk about contractors paying subcontractors?
That is a good question. I'm going to refer to some of my colleagues on the call. I don't believe that it does speaks directly to that. It would be exactly the same. It would be the current law that already exists. I see Mike Walsh is joining me on the call, and he could offer more specifics. But AS 36.90.200, it would be to match that, which I don't believe calls out subcontractors. Mike, I will turn to you, if I may.
Yes, through the chair, Mike Walsh, I'm Vice President of Public Policy at the 4-Acre Group for the record. No, this is just about the contract that goes to the nonprofit or municipality or tribal organization. It's not about subcontractors under that.
Follow up. So, through the chair, how widespread are we talking? Is this a major, major problem, or this is happening to a few people? I'm just trying to get a better feel of what we're trying to deal with here statewide as far as, I mean, we're here listening because there's an obvious reason, but I'm just wondering how big that reason is.
Yeah. Through the chair, thank you for that question. We for many, many, many years have been trying to understand the entire scope of the problem, and we have gone really to every department to find out. It's very hard to get information from the individual departments about the delay. I think the snapshot in time survey document that you have is our attempt to convey the problem to you, that it is in every department. It ranges from, it can range up to more than $1 million in delay payments. We're talking about every organization that receives a grant, a contract, or reimbursement would be beholden to these rules. The full scope, we don't exactly know, but we have heard enough from doing this work for so long and trying to solve it in so many ways that we know it's widespread and we know it's a lot of money, but we don't know exactly the numbers.
All right, thank you.
But we would encourage you to ask the commissioners those numbers because they probably know better than we do.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you.
Senator Tobin has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Wolf, I'm curious, in some of the notes that I have here on this particular issue and in reading your supporting document, I noted that 4-Acre Group did a survey of 46 folks, more than 46 folks, but received 46 respondents. And I'm curious, from your perception or your knowledge, why did it take you as a third party providing oversight and not the state, ensuring that it's paying its contractors in an appropriate period of time?
Through the chair, it's a great question. We would have liked to have gone about it differently, but we just couldn't get all of the information that we needed. And we just kept hearing one by one by one by one by one for so many years. And what would happen is that we would then bring these one by one issues to the attention of the different departments. And they might fix one, but they wouldn't fix all. and when, you know, we just couldn't get any further than that. So we really feel like it is part of our role in protecting and advancing the sector to think about and bring forward these large issues. And when we started to do that, we also realized that this is not just nonprofits. This is our partners in local government and our tribal partners. And that's for that reason, you know, one of our first steps before the survey, we passed a resolution at 4-Acre, and AML also passed a resolution with its members just to elevate this issue. So again, it's not that we haven't been talking about this for years, and we have lots of anecdotal data. This survey was just an opportunity for a point in time to just start to paint that picture about how large the issue is.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I know that we have some folks from DOT on the line as this committee is specifically interested in this 11% that 4-Acre has identified as from the respondent pool in experiencing delays from the Department of Transportation Public Facilities. So I'd like to hear from the department if they are able to comment or provide some clarity as to what internal processes have they conducted in terms of ensuring that we don't have folks waiting to get paid for work that they are doing.
Hi, this is Rebecca Garrett with Department of Transportation.
Thank you for joining us today, Rebecca. If you could please put yourself on the record and answer the question, we can repeat it for you as well if you like.
I apologize. I don't know how to put myself on the record.
Oh, that's okay. No problem. Don't worry at all. You just say your full name and like your job title at DOT. No problem.
Okay, thank you. My name is Rebecca Garrett. I'm the Frontier Roads Program Manager, and I am here representing DOT I unfortunately only have responses for the programs that I operate, which are the snow trails, ice roads, winter trail marking. And then I do work with some other nonprofits in workforce development, but I would be unable to speak to an overarching system at DOT.
Okay, that's fair. Senator Tobin, do you have any specific questions for Ms. Garrett?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, Ms. Garrett, I assume that you're here because you do engage in providing contractual payments to entities outside of DOT for work that the state has delegated to those organizations. Can you talk a little bit about your processes in ensuring that folks get paid in a prompt manner?
Absolutely. We set up to sub-award the federal funds, we set up memorandum of agreements. And prior to the season getting started, we hold kickoff meetings with the different groups. Tribes typically have ice roads, and then we have nonprofits that have the snow trails. So that we work through the reporting forms and what's expected, and we ask for application at the last Friday of every month. So that the billing doesn't get too far behind. And that can happen because they might be having a low snow season or they might not be working too much, but we do still need a report from them. As soon as they come in, and because I have them all on the same day, it's like 20 pay applications. So I have myself and another person reviewing the applications, responding to the clubs or tribes that have submitted the applications until they are correct. From the point that they are correct, we have 30 days to pay, but we move through them as quickly as possible so that we can get a correct invoice. And I don't believe that we are having a problem paying within 30 days of even the day that they submit.
That sounds great, Ms. Garrett. I appreciate that answer. Also available online for questions from the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities is Judy Chapman. Ms. Chapman, could you please give us maybe a more holistic understanding of how these types of grant reimbursements work through DOT?
For the record, my name is Judy Chapman. I'm the Deputy Director of Planning for DOT. And my purview extends to the transit operations, the rural transit providers that operate with our with the FTA 5311 funding. And we have experienced delays at times getting our reimbursements back to the nonprofits that manage rural transit operations, unfortunately. And there's a number of reasons for that. We are working with federal funds, and we do have a system set up for the billings. It's called Black Cat, where we have to ensure that all of the items that are submitted to us are federally eligible for reimbursement. And sometimes it takes a couple times going back and forth to the subrecipient, the nonprofit, to ensure that the expenditures are submitted, you know, correctly in a way that we can reimburse. So we are aware of this problem, and we would like to make some changes to improve prompt payment and actually have looked at forward funding such operations instead of waiting until they bill us, if we could figure out a way to do that and still meet our requirements under 2 CFR 200, which is the, you know, the way that federal billings are reviewed and ensured to be allowable. So one of our ideas was to look at that forward funding. We have been in a situation where we've had a really key vacant position for about a year in our transit group, the lead of that group, and so have not had someone there really to focus on this full time. But that is the direction we would like to go over time once we get that person in place. And we certainly recognize the difficulty that this can put on our rural transit operators. We've also had some issues with our FTA folks. They've been just kind of decimated in numbers, and there's been a whole scale turnover there. So just kind of getting that coordination back up and running so that we can improve those times for billings would be pretty critical.
Thank you for that information, Ms. Chapman. I greatly appreciate it. I heard you mention that there was some trouble at the federal level with FTA, and you had a key vacancy. Are there any other roadblocks statutorily or regulatory that we could help remove as a legislature that could speed the prompt payment process along?
I'm not aware of any at the state level. I think our main concern is with the federal requirements that we're under. If we approve payments for things that aren't, that turn out not to be federally eligible, then the state has to pick up that ultimate bill with its own state funds, which is not a position we would like to be in. So maybe there's a way to share some of the risk with the subrecipients. You know, there's always things like bonding and whatnot for the forward funding that we could look into to sort of mitigate some of that risk that might not apply in every case. But I think we're going to have to get a little bit more creative because, you know, the people dealing with the bills want to make sure all the expenditures are completely eligible, and that's a great thing, but that can take a bit of time to get through that process.
Okay, understood. I thought I heard you mention bonding. Could you tell me more about that?
That was just an idea that I'm throwing out, and it probably is a bit off the cuff, but if the state was going to try to forward fund some of the transit providers and we had a risk on our side that they may be not completely understanding what's federally eligible or not following those rules, there could be an ability to apply some kind of performance bond where we put the responsibility of understanding those federal requirements more squarely on the providers, and then they have to certify that everything is eligible. And if they make a mistake and the state has to pick up that bill, we would have a bond that we could pull to cover that expenditure rather than have it go to our very limited state funds to cover it.
Understood. Thank you. Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Chapman, I'm curious, and I know this is not a bill hearing for Senate Bill 129, but I do note that DOT did not submit a fiscal note. And so my curiosity is really around attempting to reduce the delay in folks getting paid. Are all the suggestions that the department have in simply in filling key vacant positions or potentially in a restructure, or is there any additional resource that the department might need?
I'd probably have to turn to Andy Mills for that one. I'm not aware that we had really had the details on this one to be able to prepare a fiscal note yet, but I'm sure we would be interested in taking a hard look at it and doing more due diligence on what the cost could be to the department.
Thank you.
Senator Rauscher.
Thank you very much, through the chair. So I originally asked the question how big of a problem this is, but I'm looking on page 2 here now. We have a pie chart, and I see it's broken down in percentages. But I was wondering how many responses did you get so I get an idea of the amount of concerned individuals actually took the survey. Is that available?
Ms. Wolf.
Through the chair, Mike, I'm looking at you too. Could you repeat the question? I'm sorry. You're asking how many? Thank you, Mike.
Let me try it. Through the chair, 46 respondents, and we asked them to identify which departments they were experiencing delays with, and 11% of those respondents identified Department of Transportation. It's important to note that the pie chart actually, the numbers equal more than 100%, which in a pie chart is unusual. But the reason that is because a number of nonprofits in particular identified multiple state departments that they were getting funding from and experiencing delays with. I hope that answers the question, Senator Rasher.
Senator Rasher. So qualification, there was just 46 responses, correct? That's true?
Correct.
And then can I ask how many, do you have an idea how many did not respond? In other words, did you just, how was the survey taken to where it was given to certain individuals, or was it just out there on a website somewhere so we get an idea that maybe a lot of people never ever saw the survey, or was there an actual ping going on for certain individuals to respond? I'm just trying to understand how the survey was taken is all. Thank you.
Thank you. It's just a snapshot in time. I will just offer that. You know, getting anyone to fill out a survey anyone to fill out a survey is hard work, especially when they are trying to deliver mission at the same time. So I would not take that as everyone that is experiencing problems. I would take this as a snapshot in time from organizations who are feeling that impact and have the moment to fill out a survey. It is a survey. That is all it is. I think if you want to know the true impact, I would just encourage you again to come back to each department and have the department tell you exactly how many grantees they have delay with. That will give you the full answer from every department. We cannot get that information.
Just a real quick follow-up. Wondering how is the survey taken? Was it in a website, your website?
Through the chair. It was still delivered online through 4 Acres network, email network.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Very good. I think we are ready now to move on and hear from the executive director from the Alaska Municipal League, Mr. Nils Andreasen. Mr. Andreasen, welcome to Senate Transportation. Please put your name and affiliation on the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you. For the record, Nils Andreas, I'm the executive director of the Alaska Municipal League. I'm going to cover a lot of the same ground, I think, as Ms. Wolf has, and I'll attempt to answer some of the questions that came up along the way to the extent that I have kept track of them. But first, thanks again for the opportunity to testify. AML is, and I'm here representing and working to strengthen Alaska's 165 local governments. I think to Senator Rauscher's question about to whom does this apply, it's everybody. So for at least our membership, it's 165. All cities and boroughs have the potential to have delayed payments occur to them. And we know that's true for certain programs, and maybe not all programs apply to them. I would expect that the nonprofit sector experiences that similarly, that it applies to anybody who's receiving or has a grant or contract with the state of Alaska. There's the potential for lack of prompt payment at the end of the day. So the survey results, as Ms. Wolf spoke to, are a snapshot in time. It's also worth noting, I think anonymized came up earlier. There's a real fear to responding to a survey for many of those nonprofits, tribes, and local governments, a fear that it will lead to greater delayed payments. And I think we should recognize that there's a certain power structure here and imbalance for those receiving on the tail end of the delivery of these services and those who are ultimately providing that payment. So I think just kind of think about that, and maybe that places some things in context. So we're here to talk about prompt payment failure, right? Late state payments and why fixing them matters for transportation, in particular for this committee, but for community infrastructure and for the basic reliability of public services statewide. AML is coming at this from a number of angles. Most prominently, the reason we're at the table on this issue is because of community assistance, but also areas like shared taxes, wildfire reimbursement for local fire departments, and public transit. Every time we reach out to our members asking for examples, we uncover a new level of missed payment and delay that's ultimately impacting their ability to deliver services on behalf of the state. So we want to emphasize scope. I realize we're in Senate Transportation, and I will speak to transit in particular a little later, but this isn't targeting DOT. In Alaska, in recent survey results that Foraker has provided, delayed payments are attributed to multiple departments. This is across state agencies. Respondents named health, education, transportation, family, community services among the most common. These impacts are hitting organizations across Alaska from across the spectrum of state agencies. Alaska, the state of Alaska already recognizes prompt payment as a matter of public policy. In construction and public works, state law generally requires payment within 30 days of a compliant request. And it requires interest if the state pays late, tied to Alaska's legal interest rate. In procurement purchases, Alaska requires payment by contract terms or within 30 days of proper billing and sets interest at 1.5% per month when late. So the state gets it in some circumstances. There's two key problems. One is a coverage gap. That policy doesn't apply to nonprofits, municipalities, Alaska Native organizations who deliver services and projects through grants and contracts that aren't covered by the same enforceable prompt payment framework. The legislative record states plainly that unlike private construction contracting, there's no accountability mechanism or consequence for the state when it delays payment to these entities. The second problem is enforceability. For many procurement purchases, interest is not automatic. The rules require the vendor to submit a written request for the interest after they finally get paid with documentation and within a short timeline. That structure reduces accountability and shifts administrative burden onto those already carrying the cost of delay. The documented impacts are serious. Foraker's statewide survey reports that most delays fell in that 3 to 6 month range, with some respondents facing delays of 12 months or more. And at any number, that's not sufficient, right? So whether it's 46 nonprofits that respond or 4,600, the fact that there are delayed payments for that amount of time and to the and for as much as 1.9 million isn't acceptable for a state that is ultimately responsible for delivering its side of the deal. So they're not minor inconveniences. The same report describes organizations using reserves, taking lines of credit, delaying purchases, reducing staff, and sometimes pausing services until payment arrives. I think Ms. Wolf mentioned a line of credit. I know ours is not at a good deal, but paying 8% for a line of credit isn't where we want nonprofits or other organizations. It really is a subsidy for the state that local governments, nonprofits, and others can't afford. Municipalities have warned that delayed state payments can lead to missed deadlines, increased costs, and significant cash flow challenges for local projects and services. And just in our outreach to members most recently, it came down to, can we pay people who fought fires this summer? Were we getting repaid in a timely fashion for the state for that? The state's own fiscal notes show this is measurable and actionable. The Department of Health reported an average of 73 days to pay contract invoices, within a key administrative component, and estimated a quantifiable interest penalty exposure under the proposed framework, enough that they asked for added accounting capacity to manage payments and avoid penalties. We've heard that from other agencies, and these are symptoms. These are symptoms of a state that's starving itself, a state that hasn't had the revenue and has been actively working at tightening its belt. And this is the effect that it requires a fiscal note to add staff, add capacity within agencies to just follow the due diligence that it's required of them. We recognize that many projects are funded with state or federal grants and that agencies have a responsibility to ensure funds are spent appropriately before payments are made. So do grant recipients. Subrecipients have in their terms the requirement to follow 2 CFR 200 just like the state does. And if they don't, they have audit findings and they're not qualified for federal funding anymore or face additional exposure. So there's workarounds through that. And the same responsibility the state has are responsibilities that local governments, nonprofits, and tribes have. Oversight and documentation are important. Local governments share that interest in protecting public funds. At the same time, the process must provide some reasonable level of certainty and timeliness for the communities, contractors doing the work. When reviews or approvals take unpredictable amounts of time, the financial burden shifts to municipalities and project partners who must carry these costs while waiting for reimbursement. Establishing clearer timelines, consistent documentation standards, and more efficient payment processes across agencies would help maintain accountability while ensuring that projects can move forward without unnecessary financial strain. For this committee, transit funding pass-through might be the most pertinent example that that we can talk about. And I have anonymized this statement, but provide it for you. So since roughly 2018, the Alaska Transit Office, which serves as the state's pass-through entity for federal transit administration funding, has struggled with consistent administrative and staffing capacity. As a result, grant agreements, reimbursements, and capital awards have not been executed in a timely or predictable way. That breakdown is directly affecting our community and transit systems across Alaska. As the pass-through entity, as the only one who can receive these funds in Alaska, Alaska DOT is responsible for executing agreements, processing reimbursements, overseeing compliance, and administering capital awards. Those core functions have been delayed for several years due to staffing instability and unresolved internal administrative policy issues. For context, this community's FY26 FTA Section 5311 Rural Area Formula Program Operating Agreement was not executed until 8 months into the fiscal year. During that time, they could not submit for reimbursement. Once they were able to submit on an award, reimbursements have still been significantly delayed, in some cases months. Alaska provides zero state match for rural transit, yet controls the timing of federal fund distribution, one of the few states in the nation that provides nothing. This leaves municipalities and nonprofits carrying both the required local cash match and the cash flow burden. Under the FTA Section 5339 Bus and Bus Facilities Program, projects are roughly 3 years behind. The ongoing ICAP and non-participation issue is entirely a state administrative matter. The required match for 5339 is provided by local communities. The state provides no match, yet unresolved internal policy questions have stalled awards. Federal funds have been lapsed or returned, hurting Alaska communities and transit operations across the state. We were notified that an FY22 discretionary award between FTA and the state was finally executed in December 2025. However, to date, we still do not have a subaward agreement in place and cannot move forward. Continued delays puts this funding at risk. What we need, this community says, is to stabilize and restructure transit office administrative capacity, including evaluating staffing levels, leadership structure, and internal processes. Benchmark that against how other states administer their FTA pass-through programs and immediately resolve the ongoing ICAP and non-participation issues so capital programs can function predictably. The state can and should establish firm, predictable timelines for agreement execution and reimbursement processing, execute outstanding discretionary and formula subawards so projects can proceed, and ultimately provide transparency and accountability regarding the backlog and federal fund obligation status. It's not a funding increase request. It's a request for functional administration so that federal dollars can reach Alaska communities as intended. AML supports the prompt payment parity legislation consistent with HB 133 over on the House side. Clear deadlines and enforceable interest for grants, reimbursements, contracts paid to municipalities, nonprofits, and Alaska Native organizations. We also recommend improving the design. Make penalties automatic when they're due, rather than requiring vendors to request them after the fact. We recognize that state agencies are working hard within the given constraints that they're under. The system itself can unintentionally shift financial burdens onto municipalities and contractors. One tool that many states use to address this challenge is allowing advance payments or mobilization payments, which Ms. Chapman referenced. Advance payments are common practice in many state transportation systems and federal infrastructure programs. They allow projects to start more quickly, reduce financing costs built into bids, and expand participation from smaller and local contractors. AML also recommends transparency. Alaska does not appear to have a statewide standardized tracking system for delayed payments. Forker survey indicates that each department tracks differently. It's not our job to keep track of the state's failure to pay. It's the state's job. We urge the legislature to require quarterly reporting by agency and program, days to pay, percent on time, total interest and penalties owed and paid, and the main causes of delay. The legislature needs to know as the oversight authority. Alaska already has statutory grounding for a public financial transactions website. We can build on that. Finally, we urge a constructive approach. This is not about blaming one agency or one administration. The legislative record notes the problem has spanned multiple administrations and requires a systemic response. Prompt payment is a basic government performance requirement. Fixing it strengthens transportation delivery, protects essential services, reduces hidden financing costs, and improves vendor participation and competition statewide. Alaska's communities are ready to partner with the state to deliver infrastructure that supports transportation, energy, water systems, economic development. Ensuring the payment systems work efficiently is a practical step toward achieving these goals. Thank you, and we stand ready to work with the committee, DOT, and the administration on a comprehensive, practical solution.
Thank you very much, Mr. Andreasen. Are there any questions from committee members? Senator Ruffer.
Well, I just, I'm looking at page two through the chair. So it says 4.6, I think my math says it's 4.6 contractors or nonprofits. I'm not sure. But either way, are waiting for 1 million to 1.9 million and 4.6, because it's 10% of 46, are waiting for 500,000 to a million, right? Is that what, I read?
Senator, I think that's what the, through the chair, Senator Rauscher, I think that's what the Foraker document references, yes.
Thank you.
Very good. I certainly appreciate the desire for a tracking dashboard of some kind. I think we have opportunity there. And yeah, very good. Anything further? Thank you. We'll move now to Ms. Pat Branson. Ms. Branson, please put yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon. I'm speaking from our local legislative information office. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Senator. So thank you for allowing me to be here today and speak on this important bill. I am Pat Branson, a board member of the 4-Acre Group and retired CEO of the Senior Citizens of Kodiak, who operates the Kodiak Area Transit System, and I'm also on the HNET board. I have spoken directly with public transit and human service transportation providers to get their information on delays with grant agreements, reimbursement processing, and payments. And I've kept this information in general terms and anonymous to ensure relationships with DOT staff and grantees are not jeopardized. This is how reimbursable operations and administrative DOT grants are supposed to work with the Black Cats online transit data management system, which is much like other state departments use, such as GEMS and the Department of Health. DOT uses Black Cats for submitting all documents regarding grants, billing, and payments. Grants are written, submitted, and approved with funds that are already approved and budgeted and released for each new fiscal year. The new fiscal year grants are uploaded into Black Cats. Billing summaries for operations, administration, and capital costs are loaded into Black Cats, so transit providers can submit monthly paperwork for reimbursement after services have been provided. The required billing summaries are reviewed and approved. Nonprofits are reimbursed in a timely fashion for services which have already been provided, and transit services continue to be provided according to grant agreements. According to speaking to several transit providers, human service providers, as well as public transit providers across the state, not just in one area, this is what I have found what is not working with prompt reimbursable payments being made for services already provided. Grant agreements are continuously delayed in being loaded and finalized into the Black Cat system. For one transit provider, DOT extended the 2025 grant due to the FY26 grant agreements being delayed and loaded into Black Cats. That amendment was not completed until September 2025, more than 60 days into the new fiscal year, so the provider could not submit reimbursable documents to DOT, which of course caused cash flow issues. The FY26 grant was loaded in November, and the billing summaries, which are used for reimbursement, were not accessible until December 2025. Half the new fiscal year was done. nonprofits continued services October through December with not being able to submit required documents for reimbursement. Once the required reimbursement billing summaries are loaded, there are processing delays that are unpredictable as to when payments might occur. It usually takes 30 days for invoices to be reviewed, followed by an additional 15 to 30 days before payment is issued. This means nonprofit expenses remain unpaid 60 to 75 days after they are incurred. One nonprofit had an invoice submitted for July 2025 expenses and with billing summary delays could not submit this invoice until September and was finally paid in mid-November. Another nonprofit, after multiple DOT contacts, was finally paid in January 2026 for services delivered August through December 2025. This is a consistent pattern and causes stress in trying to meet transportation service needs and demands and grant payments not being made. This is how delays have affected nonprofits across the state. Late payments mean cash flow issues across the board. Payroll is not met, with some executive directors not being able to pay themselves. One nonprofit had struggles with utility shutoff notices. Vendor payments are delayed. One nonprofit has $500,000 outstanding. Shutdowns are threatened and not being able to continue services to some of the most vulnerable Alaskans. Federal audits are affected. And when told what can be done with these delays and non-payments, providers have been told to take out a line of credit. This lack of accountability is treating nonprofit service providers not the same as for-profit businesses, and it's unacceptable. Nonprofits must be managed like a for-profit business in order to survive. Passing Senate Bill 129 brings parity to nonprofits, municipalities, and tribes. And it certainly is the right thing to do. And I just wanted to make a comment with what Ms. Chapman has said about forward funding. And that to me does make sense. I've heard that comment from providers of transit services. Forward funding also needs to have a timeline to implement. Also in Ms. Chapman's notices about federal requirements and eligibility, I think those kinds of requirements could be taken care of in the grants that are submitted to DOT as part of the RFP process to make sure that nonprofits are eligible and meeting the FTA requirements. Thank you for the opportunity to submit this testimony today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Branson. Are there any questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, Ms. Branson's testimony inspired me to ask another question, possibly of Ms. Chapman from DOT. Ms. Chapman, we heard Ms. Branson's testimony about there not being a possibility for a nonprofit to even submit documents for reimbursement for quite a long time. Can you help the committee understand why it is that a transportation group that might be charged with bringing especially senior citizens around town, why they could incur expenses in July but not be able to submit receipts and documentation for reimbursement for months after that? Why can't they submit their stuff right away?
I would prefer, Chair Yorkman, I would prefer to talk with our acting transit manager to get the details on that. They can submit their payment fairly immediately. If there's something in there that isn't done correctly, then generally it gets returned to the transit provider to provide more detail or more a different type of information that they might not have known about. So those interactions going back and forth over Black Cat, over that system, can take a bit of time at times. And we do meet with our transit providers biannually to try to go, and we bring the Black Cat people from the lower 48 up to Alaska, and we also have FTA there, and we talk about our issues and attempt to solve some of them and come up with ideas for how we can better manage the system. The idea of forward funding did come up at the October meeting last year, and I do think I personally think that is the best solution if we can determine a sound way to make that happen, because we certainly don't want any small business or nonprofit to be stressed out, not knowing if they can meet their payroll and wondering if they're going to lose their business essentially because of the lack of float in their system. So there's clearly things that we need to figure out about how to forward fund them. But as far as the details of the back and forth over billings, I need to defer to my grant, a couple grant people, technicians in the transit program that are working on that, and I can get you some details on the timing and the back and forth that occurred.
Ms. Chapman, thank you very much for that. Would it be possible to answer that to the committee in writing after you get a hold of your grants folks?
Yes, we can definitely do that.
Okay. Yep. Again, the question is, why do we have nonprofits who are executing these grants and providing services with grant funds? For instance, they are expending funds in July, but they are reporting that they are not able, it is not possible for them to submit for reimbursement for the expense of those funds for sometimes months after that. So I'm wondering why they cannot submit for reimbursement sooner. If you could just reply to the committee in writing with that to answer, that would be most excellent.
Yeah, Chair Bjorkman will do. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Senator Tobin has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the questions that has come up in my community is we continue to work on what we call Fairness for Fairview, or Reconnecting Fairview, has been some delays in reimbursements since August of last year. It is fascinating to me because I think the trouble isn't necessarily within our State Department, but potentially in some of the approvals that have to go up the proverbial chain into the federal FHWA. And so, Ms. Chapman, I'm curious, when you provide this written input back to the committee, if you could talk about or at least identify if there are some delays that are being perpetuated by a lack of approval from outside of the state.
Senator Tobin, through the chair, yes, I am not sure about the details of that. Are you talking about a transit operation for Fairview or something else? I'm not entirely clear.
The particular grant is called Reconnecting Fairview, and it was obtained last year, and we've been working with Galen Jones as our planner on reimagining that particular corridor. And we have a fiscal sponsor, which is a nonprofit in our district, who has not been reimbursed since August.
Senator Tobin, through the chair, thank you for that. I'm not familiar with that particular grant, but I can look into it and see if that's an issue at the federal level. It sounds like it may be.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Chapman. That concludes our docket of invited testifiers for the day, unless I should say, Mr. Walsh, we have not heard anything from you. Do you have anything that you'd like to add?
Through the chair, thank you, Senator Bjorkman. No, I think we've covered it with our partners here, and I appreciate the opportunity and Lori's ability to be here and provide her comments. So thank you.
Thank you, sir. Okay. That now concludes our slate of presenters on prompt payment parity for today. If any additional questions come up and occur to committee members, please submit them to my office and we can package and bundle them all up and send them to DOT or other departments that may be facing some challenges and adversity regarding prompt payment parity. So it's an interesting idea to explore. There is some live legislation, but it seems like we shouldn't need legislation to fix this problem. So it's just my personal opinion, be it humble as it is. With that, It concludes our business for the Senate Transportation Committee today. The Senate Transportation Committee will meet again on Thursday when we will have a wrap-up, most timely, of our conversation about winter road maintenance. We'll also have a special presenter from Seward High School. A Seahawk will be live in person in our midst, presenting her Caring for the Kenai project, all about using graphene nanopellets to replace road brine on the road. Road brine, of course, highly corrosive, awful, rust at our cars, brake lines, super dangerous, nasty stuff. The worst, probably. Hannah Leatherman is an amazing Seward Seahawk student who is endeavoring to replace this nasty stuff on our road with graphene nano pellets, which is separate from the stuff they put in the vaccines.
Oh my God.
And so they're totally different. She'll be with us on Thursday. So looking forward to that. As there's no further business to come before the Senate Transportation Committee today, we are adjourned at 2:29 p.m.